This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Everybody, Pete Caliendo here, Baseball Outside the Box. How are you all doing in the U.S. and around the world? Thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it. Interesting today. You guys on the show know how much I travel around the world. Well, the gentleman I'm going to introduce to you in a minute blows me away when traveling around the world. His frequent flyer miles is 10 times more than mine. He's been everywhere around the world. This is going to be a fun show. But before we start, don't forget, try to forward. We are just joining live on Facebook, and I'm going to see who's on Facebook. We're going to join live on Facebook. If you got some questions on Facebook, please ask, and then we're going to get started. Let me introduce to you Murray Cook. Murray, the president, Brightview Sports Turf Division. This is going to be an interesting talk because, you know, not many people talk about maintenance of a field, not just baseball field, but all kinds of fields, especially now when we get back into the swing of things, how coaches should be working on their fields. Prior to that, if they can get outside on their own and do something, a lot of interesting things. Murray Cook, MLB field and facility advisor, international venues all over the world, 20-year service with MLB. He's been in the Olympics. I've had the great fortunate opportunity to work with Murray on the World Baseball Classic, the Pan Am Games, you know. They've done all the, like, the Little League Series for Major League Baseball, the London Series, but you talk about somebody who's done maintenance all over the world. So not only are we talking about, you know, doing the field maintenance, but when you're traveling the world, there's a lot of obstacles too, as far as shipping equipment and doing all kinds of stuff. So we'll talk about some fun things. And the last thing, and Murray's got a tremendous amount of experience, but the last thing I want to tell you, I love this part, Disney management program he went through. I think it's, I wish I could do it. It talks about organization, leadership, business management. An incredible program. I've had a good friend of mine go through it, and maybe we'll, if we get a chance, we'll ask Murray about that. So let's get started. And if you're on Facebook Live, that's Murray Cook. I'm Pete Caliendo. How you doing, Murray?
Hey, Pete, good to hear from you, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Every show, we always tell people, just relax. It is serious, but do your part. If everybody does their part, it's like a good team, right? Everybody does their part. We're all going to be winners at the end.
Absolutely. And that's what we try and teach in all of our clinics we do around the world. When we do these field maintenance clinics, which we do, we've done quite a few, and it's really, we're trying to focus on the number one thing is making sure the fields are safe, right, for the players. You know, they're good to look at from the fans' perspective, but at the end of the day, you know, we don't want anybody getting hurt. So that's the main focus of pretty much what we try and do around the world at these ballparks.
Absolutely. Hey, I know you've had a few of these espressos around the world just to keep you up at, you know, since you guys, you know, I've been with you. You guys work all day, all night, you know, then you got to get to the hotel, get a few more sleep, get back on the field. So just for you, an espresso ready to go.
I like it. Have, do a double for me, would you?
That's right. I'll have somebody bring me one, hopefully. All right, listen, I think the first thing, because, you know, in baseball, there's so many different ways to get into baseball. One way is in field maintenance, you know, not only at the high school, college, professional, there's all kinds of ways. So give an idea, how did you get started? And maybe just a little advice and people that are interested in getting a career in this, how do they start?
Well, like everything, things have evolved over the years. Since when I started, it was, you know, the School of Hard Knocks, you know, kind of working at the ballpark. I grew up behind a ballpark in Salem, Virginia, and I was shagging balls behind a fence, and next thing you know, they brought me inside to teach me how to work in the field. Back in the 80s and 90s, there weren't programs, you know, school programs, college programs, where you could learn how to be a groundskeeper for a ballpark. There was golf course maintenance programs that you could learn, turf management and those type of things, so, but not much on the baseball side. Probably in the last 10 to 15, probably 20 years, there's been a great growth in developing more literature and materials on how to maintain your sports fields, whether it be, you know, baseball, soccer, football, any sport. And one of the organizations there is a nonprofit, the STMA.org. They do a great job in putting information out there to the public and helping folks, coaches around the world. You know, you can become a member of the organization. and you get these weekly, monthly reports and documents that you can review. And you know, it's a great organization. But yeah, I mean, it's and the evolution of fields, you know, from when they were built back in the 70s and 80s, you know, they didn't do a lot of drainage instruction. They didn't do a lot of sub-base insulation. They weren't using engineered soils to make the fields drain and play more safely. And so that whole evolution has just come forward to an amazing situation we're in now, with the fields being, you know, after a 7-10 inch rain, a heavy thunderstorm, you're out there playing like right afterwards. Well, that's just not by chance. It's by the design and construction of the field.
Hey, you know, folks, Murray is on Twitter. He's at Cook Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y. Check him out. Also, he's got groundskeeper.mlbblog.com, which is a blog, I'm assuming, about groundskeeping.
Yeah, I started writing that, but geez, I would say, when did we start? Probably back in 2005, I think I started that one with mlb.com and the guys there. Mark Newman started it up, and I was the second blogger after Lasorda. I wrote a lot of articles on maintenance and different things, places we've been, just sharing the knowledge. I think that's what I've always loved doing: education, providing services, and, you know, sharing what I know. It's only way to get better is by working as a team, like you said, and trying to make things better for the players on all the fields.
Hey, you know, I've had the chance, obviously, to work with a lot of your staff members, great guys from Major League, from Minor League Baseball. In baseball, we talk a lot about, you know, players who come from countries that, you know, fields aren't the best, conditions aren't the best. They really learn fast because, you know, they're working under tough conditions. You know, your crew has to go out all over the world. I'm sure they've gotten better simply because they've gone to some country. Maybe they couldn't get the shipment of whatever you needed, and they had to compromise and do something else. That it had to be unbelievable experiences.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. When you go to, you know, in our country, we've got, you know, a lot of resources. You go to Cuba, you go to Beijing, you know, China, you go to some of the Latin American countries that just aren't as fortunate and have the up to date tools and equipment that we have here. You know, you start learning to do with what you have, and, you know, coming up in the minor league baseball world myself, I mean, you know, having a shovel and a rake and a wheelbarrow and a tamp that was your field crew equipment, and then you had a push mower, right? Well, you know, there's so many other things, but what we've learned, like you said, is that in some countries they've been able to come up with some really unique tools and equipment that is local to their needs that I've implemented in other places, which is pretty cool. So again, it's sharing that information between each other and learning. Of course, doing that in other countries where there's, you know, you have a language problem. You know, I may be saying, and, you know, for example, in China, we're over there teaching, you know, 140 volunteers what first base is, what a shag string is, what a, you know, down to the basics of, it's not even their language, you know. So creating new words around baseball. So yeah, it's been a challenge, and it's been fun too.
Well, listen, give us an idea. Give us. I'm sure audience would love to know. Give us something unique overseas that, you know, happened that you had to make an adjustment, you know, and you couldn't just follow the book.
Oh geez, you know, when we played the Orioles game in Cuba back in '99, and the Orioles went down and played the national team, and we had to fly in equipment. We had to actually fly in padding from Canada down there to protect the field. But you know, it was in the middle of the Industrial Alley season, you know, and they were playing at their Estadio Latinoamericano Stadium. Sure. And we're trying to get the field ready for this exhibition game. Well, Industrial Alley's clinched the game that night, like the 2 days before we're supposed to come out and play. Well, the entire crowd in the stands, 50,000 people, charge the field, knock the fences over. They did. I mean, and we're watching it this unfold. We just spent all this time working with what we had, and you know. So, what's great about working in Cuba? I know you've been there multiple times, Pete. Is that those people have the heart of gold and the ability to do so much with so little. It was like, it's not a problem. We'll take care of it. And everyone got together, and we're bending fences back up, and you know, had everybody in the ballpark there helping get it back to where it was so we could play the game.
That's cool. Cool. That's great working with other people in other countries. You know, I want to mention before we get into some of the details of what coaches should get ready for, you know, on the field as the season might open up. We don't know when it's going to open, but they got to be prepared. You hold some turf classes around the world. I know you do some things with the WBSC, obviously.
Yep.
You do some and turf classes in the U.S. I mean, somebody gets involved in how to get started.
Sure. Like I said, there's a couple different ways. Obviously, there's a lot of community programs, high school programs. There's a lot of in community colleges, they offer turf grass experience and turf grass classes. The online programs, like I said, the STMA, Sport Turf Managers Association, is a nonprofit group that you can dive into. Go on their website. They have a lot of documents and things about maintenance. You know, MLB's done some things. We put together an athletic field maintenance guide probably 10, 15 years ago. And then maybe 8 years ago, they translated to Spanish. And also the STMA has taken documents and translated them into Spanish as well and looking at other languages to provide this extra, you know, general guidance on things you should do. It, you know, with limited resources, you know, when you look at, you know, what we've done internationally for major league level fields and Olympic level fields, that's one thing. But, you know, what do you do for the high school and the college and the youth fields? You know, you're doing the same thing, but maybe just on a lower scale. So we try and incorporate all that in our clinics so that everyone's got a shot at, you know, okay, I can do this.
You know,
it works out pretty good.
And that's a great point because the majority of people out there in baseball organizations are going to be in that position. They're not going to be at the MLB level, college. And even high schools have some pretty good maintenance programs. You know, so let's talk about when you don't have a lot of equipment, some of the components and making sure, one, the field is prepared, two, it's maintained, because you said it perfectly. Number one goal is safety.
Sure. And that's what you strive for. So what makes a safe field, right? So the evaluation of that is really determining, you know, in regards to how the field has been constructed. So you want to be able to you know, if you have bad lips around the field, if you have drainage issues on the field, that does two or three things. One, obviously, it creates a wet area and puddles gain there and you can't play your game. And so you want to try and address those. It also, you know, does a lot of damage to your turf. If the field doesn't drain right, there could be other reasons that field is a drain right. It could be the fact that it's just compacted, that you haven't aerified the field and core aerified it properly or enough or have never done it. You know, aerifying machines now, what's great about the industry is that there's a lot of small mom and pop shops that are now going out and doing these simple spring and fall renovations to get your ballparks up and ready to go. And I think, you know, with, you know, what's going on now this spring, now's a good time to get out there and tell you where am I having issues with my field as far as playability, because you want to perform right and attack those one at a time. The number one has always been, you know, the condition in our game. 70% of the ball games played in the infield. So we focus a lot of our attention on the clays, on the mound, on the home plate, and the baselines, and then the outfield kind of comes in later on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think prioritizing your maintenance programs in that way kind of helps break it down, so it's not too overcoming and your struggle with getting things done.
Absolutely. Hey, what happens if, you know, you're in a situation where the drainage isn't the best? But you don't have the money to obviously fix it. Are there ways to work the field a little bit to make it just a little better?
So instead of having to go in there and do construction, I mean, we've used multiple things to drain water, right? We've used mattress pads to suck up the water, right? Have you seen people do that in other countries, right? They go out and they sponge it up, put it in a bucket and haul it off. You know, you see people, I mean, that is now a tool that you can buy, ironically.
Yeah.
But in other countries, that was the way it was done. So you're relieving the water from those areas by removing that. There's also you know, small tools. They call it a Coranda Super Soaker. It's a machine that actually rolls over the grass and it picks up the water, puts it in a tank, and it dumps it off to the side. It's not that expensive, $400 or $500, and you can have one of those, and you can, you know, push that around the infield, pick up water off the grass, and dump the water off to the side. You know, again, the whole thing really boils down to, you know, in our business, you know, is rain, dealing with the weather, mm-hmm. and having the right tarps and the right covers to protect your infield clays is a good investment, because if you can keep your clays level, your mound and home plate, your key areas level by keeping them covered most of the time. Basically, I'll tell everybody, your mound and home plate, when you're not playing, should always be covered with a tarp. Doesn't matter when, but keeping it covered with a tarp, it helps reduce the erosion from rain when you're not playing on it. It helps keep your clays moist and stable, and they're not washing out. And, you know, those puddles you have at home plate from guys hitting and didn't get a chance to go out there and pack it after that event, you're protecting it for the next day. Because what happened, you come out the next day, you had a game yesterday, you got these holes, now you got to dig all that mud out, the hole gets deeper. So the
is
maintaining that level of the home plate area, the mound area, as much as you can.
You know, when you talked about the sponges, it brought back memories. When I was 15, I was at Mickey on baseball school. I was a student counselor. As a counselor, I had to maintain my own field. So we're going back 35, you know, years ago.
Yes.
And I remember using the sponges. I even remember one time, which was incredible. Not everybody has this opportunity. We had a helicopter come in and you know, wipe the field down a little bit. But there's the question I guess I always ask is, when you do have water on the field, it may be a real basic question, but you're also, you know, you're trying to get the water off. Is there a right way to get it off and a wrong way, or where to place it?
Well, obviously, it depends on your infield clay mixtures. And I think that's something that we all struggle with, because some clays are more sandier. You get on Florida and South areas, they're a higher content of sand than they are clay, which they should be. A typical infield clay average is 60% sand, 30% clay, and 10% silt. And down in Florida, it's like 80% sand, 20% clay. So it allows the water to go through it a little bit quicker and drain off. So sometimes the worst thing you can do after a rain is go right up there and start working. You should let that field sit for 20, 30 minutes. Let's see how much water comes off of it.
Good point.
And then go out and work it. I think that's one of the bigger mistakes I've seen, that the players want to get back out there and go at it. And as soon as you go out there and start moving that water around and moving the clay, mud, you're moving mud, and then you're making the hole worse. So letting it sit a little bit, I mean, you get to know your field pretty good. And obviously there's amendments now you add to fields to help drain them. You know, these different conditioners, the Diamond Pros, the Turfaces, the Dur-Edges, there's a whole bunch of them out there now.
Mm-hmm. That's to dry the field.
That helps dry the field, and it also creates that barrier between the clay and the player's cleat, so it doesn't get sticky and track mud around that you don't want to be picking up on your spikes, but yet maintains the moisture in that field too.
If you're building a field, the drainage obviously critical. And the next layers, you said, what's the ideal layers of the field?
Well, I mean, you look at those. I mean, we're looking at probably a 4 or 5 inch thick infield clay mixture, right? No more than that. You know, the different variations, there are some great fields out there that are naturally good draining fields just by the soils that the field was grown on. The subbase soils drain well. I know the one we had here, I grew up in Salem. There's no subbase drain. It's just great native soils that drain well. You know, if you leave it alone for 35, 40 minutes, an hour, you go, it's going to be okay to play. So, you know, you look at different variations as you get into the higher levels. You know, then you get into sub-drainage layers of gravel, and then you got the 8 to 10 inches of root zone material. And right now, the root zone material under all natural grass fields are pretty much predominantly sand, like 90% sand and 10% organic matter. And then the sod goes on top of that.
And that big question would be, again, for the average person like me, best time to water the field.
Well, you look at, you know, your town, where you are in the country, obviously, it varies to some extent, but you know, you're trying to get your irrigation system to pop on in the morning, early in the morning, so that that it has time then to dry off during the next morning before you get out on the field. I mean, you don't want to be out there watering during the day, especially summertime. It's not a good idea. For one reason, you're wasting water because it's just evaporating in the air, and it's not getting that deep watering. Because if you want a healthy field, again, healthy fields are safe fields. So by continuing to really manage your water practices early in the morning, that water window of 3 or 4 hours, by the time you get there at 5:30, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning, it just finished up, and you can go right to work on your field. And during the day, if you need to spot treat water, you can. But, you know, you're looking at, 15, 20 minutes of watering with an irrigation system. Some systems, they don't have your automatic irrigation, so you have to go out there and set up, these walking sprinklers that you see a lot of these parks and have. Then those work fine. That you kind of got to be there with those and watch those run. So that puts it now you're having to come in early in the morning to run those irrigation systems.
Before ball games, during game, during the game, some maintenance that needs to be done, like dragging, you hear all the time, you drag the field. It's got to be a right way to drag it. And on top of it, how much should it be done, I guess? Should it be done in the middle of the game?
Yeah, so we look at you're again back to safety. You're trying to reduce those divots and maintain those holes from not getting deep. So technically, you should try and drag your field for sure, obviously before the game, and then we look at least twice during the game to smooth it, and then right after the game you're dragging again. What you don't want to do is leave the field after your game, leave it with all the pocks and holes in it from the game that day before, and then it rains. Well, that water doesn't sheet off. Construction of a field, lower infields tend to have a bit of a pitch to it, or grade. We call it a percentage of grade. On the older fields was like 1%. 1% is 12 inches every 100 feet is the way it falls. The problem we have when you have an infield that has kind of a peak on it is that it's hard to get your pitcher's mound high enough to meet the regulations of 10 inches above home plate. So you're kind of in that area where you want a little bit of a sheet flow where your water can gradually run off the field. But at the same note, have enough hill out there that, pitchers don't come out and say that mound's too flat, when technically, it's spot on. I remember going to Cincinnati, looking at the Reds mound, pitcher's mound many years ago. There were pitchers complaining about it. You go out and check the height of it, it's exactly 10 inches above home plate. Problem was that they got this slight grade up to help when you put the big tarp on, it helps the water run off the tarp a little quicker, which is helps the grounds crew, and it's easier to pull that big cover.
And I know for everybody it's not easy, but man, you heard Murray, if you can save some money and invest in some tarps, not the big field tarp obviously, but tarps for the pitcher's mound, home plate, possibly first and then third and second. Yeah. That could help. I mean, a tremendous, it could save a lot of games.
Saves a lot of games and saves a lot of maintenance for you in the future. And it also saves you money because you're protecting that investment of that clay. I mean, you see more high schools now investing in better clays for the mound and home plate areas than you ever have. And so to protect those, you got to get a good tarp. Doesn't make sense to spend that kind of money on these high end clays, and then just let it go because you're not covering it.
Murray, well, you see a lot of times in ball games, guys sliding in, and a lot of the dirt goes towards first base or second, and you see guys that are kind of rake it back out to make it even. Is that correct? And if there's holes, like say there's some certain holes, what's the best way to kind of fill those areas in?
Well, it's hard to do that, just before a game. That's usually right. When they're on the road for a few days, you come back in. But the key is that, when you put down your layer of turfus and your soil conditioner on top of the field, you really don't want to mix that into your clay. So first you got to broom that off the area, get down to your actual clay infill material. Right. Then you'll go in and wet that area down pretty good. And then you'll till it. Then you'll add more material and roll it. Till it, scratch it, roll it, till it, scratch it, roll it, until you get back to the level of the base. Then after your final roll, then you can put your turfus back on top of it. If you don't clean that surface off between those areas, you'll get this what we call plating, where when it dries out, big chunks of dirt come up on the infield when a guy takes a turn, and that's not good either. That's not very safe.
You know, you mentioned rollers. One experience I noticed, how they're like a ton. I mean, they weigh a ton, those rollers. Now, let's take some of the things you just mentioned, just for our audience in different parts of the world. If I don't have a roller, what's some options? Or if I don't have something that you mentioned, what are some options to replace it?
And tire rolling that we use when we use like a golf cart, right? Because it has flat tires on it. And it's not that heavy. But you know what? I've used them in the past. That's all I've got. I'll put a couple guys on the cart, the big guys, right? And we'll get out there and tire roll those areas, and it acts like a roller, in regards to helping compact those areas back. Better than using nothing. Or you use a hand tamp, and you hand tamp those areas. If it's small enough, you can use a hand tamp, and you can rent something called a plate tamp that also works. And those are, we use those on mounds and home plates. And if you rent a tape plant for a day, it's probably a couple, $300. You can plate tamp your mound, your home plate, all your bullpens, everything, and then they come get it and take it away. I mean, and then in the industry, we're big about sharing equipment. So we look for, in the Dominican Republic, where they have a lot of, training centers for the major league clubs. And they have, of course, we have the Winter League clubs there, too. Just in the past 4 or 5 years, we've done clinics there and really haven't. What's great is that these guys have never been together before, right? So we're able to get them together, and they started exchanging phone numbers. And now they're saying, hey, can I borrow your top dresser? Can I borrow? Yeah, you've got a roller. You've got, hey, can I get this over for the day? And so it creates this community field maintenance program that, everyone doesn't buy that one piece. But if you got one and he gets the other one, they get the other one, then, you're better off.
Love it, love it. Hey, as we work around, we're getting right to the mound, the mound should have probably been first, because that's where everything happens, 100% of the time. Everything's going on there constantly. So let's talk about the mound, especially because, you're going to hear this everywhere. There's holes by the rubber. There's holes where you land. There's different holes. I can't fill them in. I'm not sure exactly how to fill it in, how soft, how hard, all that stuff.
Yeah, the mound's always been a topic. It's something that we focus on all of our clinics and camps we do. And it is something we spend a little more time on, because, the pitchers are key to having good stability. And if you've got a good pitcher's mound out there, your pitcher's going to throw better. So if you're a home team, you want to have a good pitcher's mound. And maintaining that is no different than anything else. I mean, you need to take it from ensure, one, you have decent clay materials in the pitcher's mound to work with.
Is it the same amount as the field, the clay?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit higher in clay content. So when I said earlier the infield was like 60, 30, 10, the pitcher's mound is like 50% clay, 30, 40% sand, 10% silt. It's a higher clay content. So again, it's another reason why you need to put a tarp out there to protect it. Clay gets super hard, starts to crack. You don't want that happening, because when it cracks and dries out, then the clay is no good. You got to haul it off, put more clay in. But maintaining the pitcher's mound, the slope is very critical. We try and get guys to consistently get that slope from the pitcher's mound down to the landing area, which is basically after the first 6 inches in front of the pitching rubber, it falls 1 inch for every 1 foot. So if you maintain that 1 inch for every 1 foot down to where the pitcher lands, except for Strasburg, you might want to go a little further, because which we've experienced that before. Maintaining that slope is always one of the big keys. You said holes around the pitcher's mound. I mean, they're coming up with really good pitching rubbers these days that don't show up as badly, which helps maintain the pitching rubber itself, but the actual clay in front of the mound, that clay is no different than the rest of the mound coming down the front, and the entire mound doesn't have to be this clay. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the 4 foot area in the front, straight down in front and around where we call a plateau where the pitcher stands. We go to a lot of these high schools and look at the fields, and we notice that you know, behind the pitcher's rubber, it starts to slope right off. Well, behind the pitcher's rubber, there's a 2-foot flat area behind the pitcher's rubber that needs to stay level. So when your pitcher tilts back and throws, he comes back and stands level when he approaches the home plate. And you know what? On all this, having the chance to work with a lot of pitchers, I remember Greg Maddux then in spring training, he'd come out and Glavine would come out and look at the mound and they talk. I mean, I could tell the day who pitched that day by looking at the mound right after they threw. And they'd come out and critique and talk about, you know, what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they liked, you know. And they look at how they drug their foot a certain way in the mound, so their consistency, because it's all mechanics, right?
Mm-hmm.
You start tweaking with the elevation of the mound and the slope. It's not consistent with what they were throwing in the bullpen. They come out, they throw high. So they're having to make adjustments on the mound just because it's not maintained right.
What are most pitchers, since you mentioned that, what are most pitchers like? Do they like a real firm landing spot?
Yeah, you know, it's really, they like it firm for the majority. Like it firm at the toe plate and then obviously in the landing area to where, you know, the cleat goes into the clay but doesn't dig a hole. And, you know, it sounds like, and I get this all the time, especially in Japan.
They do not like
wet mounds, right? They like it powder dry, dusty, you know. And
yes.
And that's kind of in some of their areas too, in Taiwan, Korea too. They tend, especially in the domes, they're, you know, concerned about the water. How are we going to get this, you know, get it too wet? You know, we're worried about it. So
yeah.
It's just getting confident that, you know what, water is your friend. In fact, you know, when you're maintaining a pitcher's mound in these areas, you're more maintaining the moisture than you are the actual mound itself. You're maintaining to keep that moisture consistent so that clay stays pliable and you won't get as big of a – it doesn't sound right. It says, well, if it's firm, it's hard, it's rock, it's not going to dig out as much. That's not right. If it's moist and the clay is holding the moisture right, you won't have any holes.
Mary, question, have you heard from Major League Baseball teams at all? Because you're starting to hear it a little bit in some of the industry, because everybody's trying to figure out why everybody's getting hurt. You know how it is, the arm. We know, you know, velocity is an issue. We know that, strength and all that. But the question sometimes comes up, you know, can it also be, you know, the mound when you land that it's too hard? Have you heard that at all from anybody?
Because it's not really. I think the clays itself. Again, moist clay isn't hard. It's pliable. It's kind of like Play-Doh. You know, it gives.
And it gives
for the player when he lands. His landing foot will stick, but it's not like he's coming down on dust or a rock or whatever, like we've seen in some of these other ballparks we've worked in.
Sure.
So, no, not really. I think the consistency of the clays now that we're getting. These engineered clays are coming in bags. You just pour them in, tamp them, and you walk away. That's it. Real simple anymore. Used to be we had to blend our own clays with sand and cool soils to make them work, which you can still do. But I think maintaining the issue is maintaining that stability. If the mound has too big of a hole at the landing area, you got pitchers complaining about the hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his hole, he's landing in mine. You got two pitchers landing different ways. He rolls his ankle because, you know, here's a mound that was too soft.
Sure.
Same thing at the toe plate. You've got a guy that throws off one side of the mound, one guy throws off the middle. You know, those holes will vary. So the idea is to reduce that hole from becoming a hole. You want it to maintain its level. And by doing that, you're able to really, you know, if you get the right clays, it's pretty easy to do.
So basically, once the game's over with, you're going to smooth it out, put more clay in the holes.
Yep.
Go through that real quick for us, just to give us an idea how that's maintained.
Yeah, really, right after the game is over, the first thing we do, we send the guys up to the mound to get that fixed up, right? Put it back to where it was when we first pitched. So right after the game is over. And by doing that, the first thing they do, they sweep off all the debris, all this conditioner, all the little clay chunks that are there. We get all that off, and then we do our watering, and then we cut in the areas. We actually scarify the hole so that you're just not putting clay into a hole that's just going to sit on top of the other. But you need to kind of create a bridging area for the new clay to bind with the old clay, and by doing that, it's not going to chunk out next time it goes out there and pitches. And once you get it back to the level, you get it tamped down good and tight, you scream it off, then you bring your conditioner back onto it. And, you know, the conditioner can get expensive on these fields. And a lot of guys, they'll bag their conditioner up, go back out, screen it, screen out all the material, and come back out and put the old conditioner back on, which is fine. It works great. So it saves you some money there.
No, is the clay kept somewhere where it stays healthy and you could use throughout the season? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, we used to get an old clay from years ago, again, taking it back to the high school levels and college levels, so where, you know, we get this gray gumbo, we call it, and it would be in these rock hard chunks, you know, we couldn't use it. So we take it out, get a tamp, get a roller and crack it up, wet it, moisten it, put it in buckets, keep it in buckets moist. So that's your post-game packing clay you use in your home plate area, you know, in the pitcher's mound. You know, same thing at home plate. You know, we see a lot of guys sliding into home plate, you know, head first, hands out. You see them sliding in feet. You know, if they come in and they slide into a hole, you know, the guy's got a chance of rolling an ankle. So, you know, you're trying to maintain that home plate to be super flat, and just like you're trying to maintain those holes in the pitcher's mound so that they don't create problems for the players later on.
And same process, home plate, right? That doesn't change with the clay?
No, it doesn't. No, around the plate, around in the catcher's area as well. Don't worry about the umpires too much. They don't, you know, they're back there and they're rubber, so they don't worry about it. But you know, the catchers, you know, catchers are sometimes just as concerned about their ability to stand in the home plate area. It's not too hard, so they can come up and pivot and throw out a first, a second, whatever. You'll get guys say today it was a little too firm. Then, you know, can you soften up a little bit more? We will. You know, there's things that, you know, of course, in front of the home plate is a whole different material. Just in front of the home plate, because you don't want that high hop ball right in front. So you're trying to maintain that to keep it moist and soft. So you're not putting a hard clay in front of the home plate. You're putting it in the batter's boxes only and where the catcher is.
You know, and that's a good point. I don't remember if you mentioned it, you might have, but when we're talking about the lips, because the lips are important, you know, for safety reasons, if you do have a high lip, is that lack of dirt? Is it? And I mean, how do you adjust it? If you don't, do you add dirt and clay, and you know, or do you cut the lip?
Yeah. That's the chicken and the egg story.
Yeah.
You try and figure out, because I've seen people go in, they just keep putting on more clay, and they put on more clay. And then the clay is in the infield. And the infield grass is down here. I'm like, well, wait a minute, you're just creating, you know, a problem here. You're designing your field and raising your entire infield grade because you got a lip. Take the lip out. You don't have to raise your infield clay. But I've seen people go in and scrape down an infield and have 3 inches of clay. And they said, well, geez, I didn't know I had that much clay out here. So, yeah, you had a lot of clay out here. Yeah, too much. It's like all these lips. So same thing in the baselines, right? Same issue. You got these guys coming down and put a lot of clay in the baselines. And, you know, how are lips created? You know, how are they? Well, let me tell you, by two ways. One, by just Mother Nature. Mother Nature is going to blow dirt into the lips and blow grass, blow the sand, blow conditioner the lips. So, you know, maintaining those, the team goes on the road, you go out there with a water hose and a rake, you can wash that material out each time. If you wait till the end of the season, it's too late. It's already built up too much, and now you got to go ahead and cut it out and lower it. Whereas, the other reason is that people are dragging the field improperly. So they'll try and fit a 4-foot drag down a 3-foot baseline. Well, guess what? That drag is hanging over on the grass. What's
great,
it doing? It's dragging right down in the grass and dragging material over into your grass. It's creating a lip because you don't see it, but it's happening. I see that all the time where guys are just out there. It's easier, and I get it, because you got a one-man, two-man ground crew. The coach and the players are out there, and they want to get done out and get on the road, and they take the shortcut and go out there with a drag and drag wherever they can. And they drag the drag right off the field, right off the edge, off the back. you shouldn't be doing that. That's just causing more lips.
Biggest mistake coaches possibly can make, you know, when maintaining a field?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's
the biggest mistake you see.
That- yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head there about the lips. I think maintaining those lips in the infield, the front edge lip, right, between first, second, and third, you know, that lip on the grass, keeping that maintained and keeping the drags away from it, 6 to 8 inches, and doing all that work around the edge of the field by hand is going to really save yourself a lot of headaches and a lot of bad hops, too.
Ray, before we end, a couple things. One, I am thinking about the squeegees. Good thing to have squeegees to take water off?
Squeegees to in the grass, not so much in the clay. You want to keep squeegees away from the clay because that's just pushing mud and dirt out of the way. And that's
good.
Yeah, and you got to be careful of it in the grass because some people get a little more aggressive than others with the squeegees, and you end up pushing too deep. Obviously, you know, these new synthetic turf fields, they're tremendous, and they have great draining capacity, but you get out there with a squeegee on a synthetic turf field, you're pushing that rubber around. So now you're creating an indention in the infill rubber that's supporting, you know, basically what the players are playing on. The grass, you know, on a synthetic turf field, the grass is no more than 3/4 inch high, but under that's like 1.5 inches of rubber. When you go in there and start squeegeeing out areas where you might have a puddle, which is typically where you're gonna have a puddle on a synthetic turf field, is around the mound, around the home plate, around the cutouts of the bases where the infielders play in. I think one thing I tell people I think is really helpful is that, you know, the old school cutouts where you have the cutout at first, second, and third, you got the grass cutout. In a rule book, it says it recommends 13 feet, that arc. And you know what? That's a recommendation. Grass infields, grass areas are kind of left up to each individual team. So what we try and do, especially at first base and third, where the guy plays in at first and third, where he's playing in, we want that to be clay. Don't put grass there. That's just a headache for you to take care of. The grass isn't going to hold up. You're going to create a lip there. And it's just easier just to put clay there and cut that grass out. Let the guy come in and play in just before he gets on the grass. Helps your field and make it last a little longer.
Great point. Hey, I did remember one more thing because I think this is important, and it's not going to be very, very around the world, but take us behind the scenes because I've been there, and boy, it's not an easy one, making a decision with the whole tarp and rain coming. Sometimes you've got technology to look at, but how do you make that decision? Hey, we got to get the tarp on or this is going to happen.
Yeah, that's part of that's having a good relationship with the umpire, right? You know, let them know where you are before the game. Let them know that you're able to go out and do some things. But, you know, the guy who takes care of the field is going to know more about the weather than anybody else.
Yeah.
He's going to know what's going to hit. And he's going to know what his field can take. And I just, you know, you got to trust in your guy there to say, look, you know, if we got a storm coming, Murray, let me know. I mean, and if you think it's going to be a battle, let me know just before it hits and we'll go ahead and pull people off. Because, again, lightning's a big issue now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, thunderstorms and so on. You don't want anybody getting struck by lightning. And it gives the guys enough time to get the tarp out there and get it covered before it does rain. Because as soon as you get the tarp on, as soon as you get back to play, if you try and play in the rain and, you know, your field isn't designed to sustain a lot of rain to play in, then, you know, you're going to have to get a cancellation.
You know, and we all going to fall under this. Let's end it with this. It's been a great show. 120 countries plus playing baseball around the world.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, coronavirus is in, you know, 150 some countries right now. We're at a certain point, we don't know when, we're going to get back on that field. So any last minute advice for coaches especially, because that's who's maintaining the fields a lot of times in most of these countries and in the U.S. Some last minute advice, what to kind of do now as you prepare to get back on the field to go right away.
Well, a lot of ballparks are in the Northern Hemisphere. And when you talk about turf grass and situations where you got grasses in the south or Bermuda grasses, a lot of people overseed it with ryegrass, right? Well, guess what? The field looks the worst in May because the ryegrass is checking out and the Bermuda's coming up. So you know what? Go ahead and take it out now. Go ahead and reduce your water a little bit. Go ahead and lower your mower a little bit and go ahead and start getting that grass, that ryegrass out. So when you are ready to go in May, June, whenever it happens, in July, whenever we can get back out there on the fields, you're good to go. I mean, now those renovations, you know, those just, yeah, that's a turf grass tip. As far as clays and edges, you know, you're trying to maintain, even with the rains coming down, you're still keeping your tarps out there on the field, your mound, the home plate, and your bullpens, and keeping those lips away. Because each time it rains, that water pushes a little bit of that clay, a little bit of that conditioner back into the edge of your grass. Don't just think, you know, it's going to, you know, now's the time to continue making sure you're blowing that back out and keeping it out so you're ready to go when the season kicks back in.
All right, man. This has been awesome. A fantastic show. I don't know if there's any last-minute tip you want to throw out there, and then we'll close it off.
No, keep it safe, man, Pete. Appreciate you bringing me on. Excited to take part in your podcast here. And, you know, again, looking forward to that big phrase, let's play ball. That's what I'm waiting for. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is Murray Cook, president of Brightview Sports Turf Division, consultant for Major League Baseball. When you see the Little League Series, when you see the London Series, what game in Puerto Rico, Mexico, big league level, that's his crew working on that field. They do a fantastic job. I've been lucky and very fortunate to work with Murray and watch all his people, the way they do things. It's amazing how fast they do it, how professional they are, how meticulous they are in everything they do. We're going to put all the show notes up. Give Murray Cook at Twitter, Cook Murray on Twitter. Check him out there. And I want to thank our loyal listeners in the U.S. and around the world. We will put Murray's stuff on our show notes in case you want to reach him. Thank you all. Don't forget, check out Baseball Outside the Box. Check out Baseball Out on Twitter, all over social media. Spread our show. This is a great topic, very important topic, because, again, every coach needs to know a little bit of how to maintaining their field, because that's where their players are going to play. Player safety is a key. So thanks for joining us today. God bless everybody, and we'll see you on the next show. Take care, Murray.
All right, see you, man. Thanks, Pete. See you. Bye-bye.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.